Greetings everybody, this is John Medioli with more on Windows 2000. Last week when I finished up, I was just telling you the prices of the various versions of Windows 2000, and I had just finished talking about a Windows 2000 Professional for about $430, Windows 2000 Server for $860, Windows 2000 Advanced Server for about $3,400, and the fact that the Windows Data Center Server is out there someplace, but finding it is certainly a challenge. So the price tag is pretty steep, and you need to have some pretty good reasons for upgrading, and depending on your needs, perhaps there's something in here that you really do need. Windows 2000 supports several different file systems. Windows 95 and 98, of course, support FAT32 and FAT16. And Windows 2000 adds to that the NTFS, the CDFS, and one other one whose name escapes me at the moment. The CDFS is the CD file system, which is what's used on compact disks. It's a read-only file system, and is very similar to the way you read CDs on any other DOS or Windows machine. NTFS, however, is extremely different from FAT16 or FAT32. To begin with, it can format of drive, I should say it can format of volume, out to something like 2 terabytes of information, which is amazingly large. It can do things like compress a directory or a file on that drive, or encrypt a directory or a file on that drive at the file system level, which is very nice because that means your application doesn't even have to know that the file is compressed or encrypted or anything else. NTFS handles security issues at the file system level, which means that you can deny particular users or groups of users access to a directory or a file, or you can just give privileges to everybody if that's what you want to do. This is something which Windows 2000 does not fully support using the FAT16 or FAT32 file systems. Because of the way that NTFS stores information on a disk, it fragments the disk considerably less than the FAT file system. In fact, Microsoft used to pretty much claim that you never needed to defragment an NTFS volume. However, these days, they ship a tool with Windows 2000 that defragments NTFS volumes, so apparently they've changed their mind. NTFS also has a recovery mechanism. It uses typical transaction and journaling type behavior very commonly found in database software to log changes made to the drive. And if your power fails on you, it's quite capable of rebuilding things. I run NTFS and have never had a problem. Now, if you've been paying attention, you'll notice that I have struggled once or twice to make sure I talk about disk volumes as opposed to disk drives. Obviously, Windows 2000 uses the same disk drives as any other Windows PC, or Linux, or whatever, any other PC standard machine. But Windows 2000 with NTFS has this really neat feature, a couple of them, having to do with multiple drives. First of all, if you want to guarantee data security, it will support RAID 5. RAID 5 is a system where your data gets spread across multiple disk drives. And if you really, really want to take three, say, 30 gig drives and make them look like, say, one 30 gig drive, you can use RAID 5, and there's pretty much no way, unless there's a catastrophic, like lightning hits your system and fries everything inside it, there's pretty much no way you're going to lose your data. But the other thing that Windows 2000 can do is it can span hard drives with one volume. So let's say you have an old 5 gig drive and another old 10 gig drive. You could actually create a disk volume that's 15 gig, looks like one drive, acts just like one drive, but of course isn't really one drive. And it all backs up as one, etc., etc. I have not actually done this. Needless to say, doing it causes all kinds of changes to the way the drive gets laid out. And there's all kinds of restrictions on how drives that are treated this way get handled. But if you do this, you can resize the volumes and do all kinds of interesting things that sound altogether too scary for me to experiment with just for the fun of it. One more interesting fact about drives, while I'm boring you with the subject, is that Windows 2000 supports something called strike sets, which means, again, we'll assume you have, say, 330 gig drives. This is a mechanism that will give you a total of 90 gig. And what it will do, and it will be 90 gig acting as one volume, what it'll do is put a little bit of data on the first drive, a little bit of data on the second drive, a little bit of data on the third drive, and then go back and put more on the first, more on the second, more on the third. And it makes an effort to keep the amount of data on each drive as balanced as possible. Now, of course, almost nobody would need this unless performance is a major issue for you. The prime benefit of this is that until the drives really start to get full, the drive heads don't need to move around very much, and therefore you get that added performance. Of course, if disk drive 1 or 2 or 3, any one of them goes bad, you lose all your data. So in any of these scenarios, except for the RAID 5 scenario, backup is crucial. Of course, backup is always crucial anyway, but these scenarios make it all the more important. There's a downside to all of this, and that is that all of those utilities you have for Windows 98 won't work at all under this file system, because everything is laid out completely differently. Perhaps the most incredible example of this that I can think of is my ongoing search for Windows 2000 backup software. It's not just the operating system that's more expensive, you see. A very popular piece of backup software is Veritas's Backup Exec. Backup Exec for Windows 98 is, I don't know, somewhere between $75 and $100. But for Windows 2000 Server, it's about $375. And frankly, I can't quite figure out what the difference is, other than that it knows how to install itself on Windows 2000. In fact, they have one version for Windows 2000 Professional and a different version for Windows 2000 Server. And really, the two operating systems aren't that different. But the price tag on those two versions of the software certainly is quite different. Perhaps one of the really nice things that I found with 2000 is that it feels like it's much more responsive, and that its performance is considerably better than Windows 98. This is likely due to the fact that there's no more 16-bit code, although it even felt a little bit faster than Windows NT 4.0, which also had no 16-bit code to speak of. I have not done much in the way of benchmarks to prove this, but it certainly does seem faster. Windows 2000 does not have a boot to DOS mode at all, nor did NT. It does, however, have a DOS box, but listening to the recent main menu program where there was quite a bit of discussion of DOS boxes, I was realizing that it has been a very long time since I've actually run a DOS program. I've become pretty comfortable working in the Windows environment and very, very rarely run DOS software. Occasionally, I do run some of the Visual Studio tools in a DOS box. A couple of them are just easier to run that way, so I do. And I found that the DOS boxes work pretty well, though I'm usually using a Braille display, so I can't comment much on how they perform using speech. Nor can I comment much on how WindowEyes works with Windows 2000, because I don't have a copy for 2000. For those of you who leave your computer on all the time, as I do, I'd like to talk for a moment about uninterruptible power supplies, or UPSs. I bought one around 1993 for maybe $175 or so, and at this point it's pretty dead and kind of needs to be replaced, but I imagine they're cheaper now. What a UPS is a battery, basically, which when the power is running in your house will remain charged, and if the power should go out, the battery power will run your computer for, say, 15 or 20 minutes. Now, the amount of time you get out of the UPS will vary depending on the size of the UPS and the amount of power your computer draws, but basically, the size unit you might have in your home will run the system for maybe 15 minutes. Now, these units, because they have a battery, at least the ones available in 1993, eventually the battery simply can't be charged anymore, and you need to get a new battery. Some units have a replaceable battery, others you just get a new unit. Well, one of the things that's very nice about Windows 2000 is that many of these UPSs have a serial cable that come out of them and go to the computer, and they signal the computer when the power in your house has gone off. This is nice because when the computer gets this signal, it can actually shut down. I don't mean turn off, I mean it can issue the Windows shutdown so that everything will be closed in an orderly way, and this even further reduces the risk of any data getting damaged on your hard drive. One of the things that I thought was nice was that the training kit for 2000, Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer Core Requirements, which is a large four-volume set covering several different Windows 2000 topics, is all available on CD-ROM. If you buy the training kit, you get two CDs included. One is a demo, well, like a 60 or 90 day evaluation of Windows 2000, and the other one contains all four volumes of the training kit on the CD in compressed HTML. It's about 32 meg of compressed HTML, and the training kit goes for about $175. You can buy each book separately for about $50. So, for example, if you purchase Windows 2000 Professional, then you could buy the Professional Training Kit and for about $50 and have a pretty decent set of documentation on setting up and managing Windows 2000 Professional. The full training kit contains a book on professional, a book on server, a book on networking, and a book on
Active Directory services.
I've been doing very little in the way of demonstration here, but my time is up for this week. So next week, I'll demonstrate the narrator and demonstrate a little bit of JAWS for Windows. Until then, if you'd like to contact me with any questions or comments, please send email to Mattioli, that's Mattioli, at pobox.com, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. That's it for this week. Until next time, this is John Mattioli on ACB Radio's Main Menu.